My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. It's the conversational podcast about video games hosted by me, Darren Hupke. If you are new to the show, thanks for giving it a shot and thanks for checking it out. The format's simple. I have a rotating cast of guests who come on. I ask them a single video game related question or prompt and we talk about it. It's short and sweet. It's designed to be easy, quick listens, and it's the perfect podcast in between podcasts. So thanks for checking it out, and hopefully you enjoy the episode. If you've come back and you're a returning listener, thank you for your support. Thanks for continuing to listen to it, and thanks for checking it out. I appreciate you. You can support me and consider doing things to support me by leaving a like or writing a review or sharing a link online. All that helps and goes a long way, and it's much appreciated. I've got other ways you can support over on Patreon at patreon.com/Darren Hupke. For as little as $1 a month, you can also support the show. That will allow you to contribute icebreaker questions that I will ask in future episodes and give you a shout out by name if I select your question. So if you'd like to interact with the show a bit and support me at the same time, consider doing that. Like I said, $1 a month over on my Patreon. Same thing on my Patreon page. You can find the digital storefront for all of my publishing books. Pixels and Polygons is more than just a podcast. I've got my retro game zine issues available for purchase there digitally. I've also got the 32-bit library series of books and books like the Beat 'em Up Volume 1 available over on the Patreon shop for digital consumption. If you want physical, if you want an actual book mailed to you or a zine mailed to you, head over to pixelsandpolygons.net. That is my storefront where you can buy everything direct from me. So again, the 32-bit library books, I've got t-shirts, stickers, other merch, all the issues of Retro Game Zine and the upcoming 2025 annual. Everything that I've got, you can find there. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support me, consider purchasing or checking out any of those projects digitally, physically, or through Patreon. Thanks again for listening to the show, and hopefully you like what you hear and you come back next week. Enjoy the episode after this ad break and stay retro. Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I am Darren Hupke. I am back with a returning guest, we can say. I can't pretend to keep these things like a secret on how I record. We are recording this immediately following just recording our previous episode, but I can still say returning guest Maddie is here back on the show. Hello again, Maddie.
Thank you for having me back 3 minutes later.
Not even 3 minutes, 30 seconds later. We just hit stop and hit start and here we go. I will again remind folks who are listening, if you didn't listen to the previous episode with Maddie, in the show notes you will be able to find links to like the social media and websites and things like that to check out, read and support and see all the cool comics, and follow along. It's really cool stuff. Let's ask you a different question then, since we asked you a little bit about who you were in the last episode. Tell us, what's a game coming out, you know, in the next year, within the next year? Like, it doesn't have to be by the end of the calendar year, like now, but like within the next year that you're really looking forward to.
Oh, so, I was just at PAX West like a week ago, and I got to play the demo for Pragmata, which,
oh yeah,
I hadn't been following. I knew it, like, I think they had originally announced it in like 2020, and then it was like silent for years, and then it finally came back a couple months ago. And so that was one that I was like, all right, this looks kind of interesting. So I played the demo at PAX, and the mechanic of it feels like a standard kind of third person shooter, but you're fighting like these like robot things. And in order to like break their security, the little girl with you has to hack them first. And so there's this kind of tiny miniature puzzle that you have to solve before you can actually do like legitimate damage to them. And it's done in such a smart way. It flows really well. It's not jarring going between having to do this puzzle right before you shoot them, and it's just like a really fun gameplay. It's just like a little addition to a third person shooter that makes it more fun and interesting, and so that I'm super excited for. I think it's supposed to come out next year.
Yeah the I don't remember originally hearing about it. I mean, I must have, but like looking it up, I guess it was announced during that official, like the original like PS5 reveal stream. It was like shown then in like a whole grouping of games and everything. And then it was like supposed to be out in 2022, but then it was delayed to 2023, and then it was indefinitely delayed and then kind of forgotten. And then randomly just this year they popped back up and said like, hey, this is still a thing. It's still happening and it's coming out next year. Which is wild. I also remember reading some recent news about it, how Capcom had to confirm that there is no link between Pragmata and Mega Man.
Yeah,
I think people were trying to make a connection there or something, but they had to sell
like
people.
The like key art has the little girl Diana like reaching her hand out, and people like are posting it next to a picture of Mega Man because it's like a pose he does a lot. I think it's pretty funny. I feel bad for Capcom because they keep having to be like, it's not a Mega Man game.
Yeah.
And I think there's this thing that game fans do online sometimes, which is they get themselves excited over something and then it turns out to be true and then they disappoint themselves. And it's like, well, you did this. This was all your conspiracy theory.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's technically, you know, Capcom doesn't do a lot of original series. So like, you know, to try and tie it to something different, like let them do something new, let them do something fresh, you know, like give
it's
them
exciting.
The opportunity to just make it and do it, you know. But yeah, that looks cool. I also am looking forward to that a little bit. I also hope that it's not too long again. We talked about it in the last episode, but sometimes too long or too heavy of games just like breaks up the flow of enjoying games over the years. So this hopefully will be one that kind of fits right into a nice little 20-hour action experience or less.
Yeah, obviously I can't tell from the demo, but it feels like it's meant to be something of a similar length, like a Resident Evil or something, like, you know, a 10 to 20-hour kind of linear, just, you know, experience.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Okay, well, let's get into it then. You want to do some this or that's and then an icebreaker question?
Perfect.
Okay, well, let's see. Action RPG or strategy RPG?
Action RPG all the way. I can't do strat. That's like the one of the few genres that I just don't play.
Oh, wow. Has there been some you've tried? Like, which are the ones that have less, like, you know, been like the hard note?
I've tried Advanced Wars. I've tried Fire Emblem. I've tried Tactics Ogre. I've tried Final Fantasy Tactics. I just don't like It's the same reason I'm not very fond of like something like chess. I don't like having to think about what every single other character is going to do.
I have this like divide in my mind. I always try and make sure I keep like Fire Emblem and Advanced Wars separate from like the Tactics Ogre or Final Fantasy Tactics. You know, like to me, one is like a more simple like combat, like rock, paper, scissor formula, and the other, you know, usually has more involved mechanics. Yes, they're all grid based, and you know, I just try and divide those. But I enjoy both of them, and I sometimes try and at least suggest like an Advanced Wars or a Fire Emblem to folks to try and consider it. But if you've already tried to do that and you're out. You know what you want. Okay, no strategies then. All right.
I wish I had some fondness for them, but it just my brain is just not wired to work with them.
The Advanced Wars Dual Strike, the DS one, like. It had this dumb in-game stats menu, like right from the main menu, you can go see your stats, and it was like total playtime, units moved, units created, like all this ridiculous like data that you didn't need to do anything with. But I was obsessed that it had that. And even after I like sold my DS and got rid of all my stuff to like buy something new, I kept my original copy of Advance Wars because like I wanted to make sure my stats stayed my stats, like in a pre-internet world for me. And I still have that copy, you know, to this day.
Very precious.
And I love the art. Yeah, I love the art of that game.
Like, Advance Wars has so extraordinary good. Art. It's such a fun style. So even if I don't enjoy playing it personally, there's a lot I can appreciate about it.
I was about to say, there's by the time people listen to us, it's going to be weeks later, but that Nintendo Direct coming up and like, you know, what's your absolute like left field speculation about it? Like I was going to say, I'd love a new Advance Wars, but we did actually just get that. Advance Wars like reboot thing.
Right. Did that come out? I remember it got delayed.
Yeah, it did. That like it was I think this came out to little fanfare.
Weird that delayed
boot camp
it.
Or,
but
what is it called? I'm gonna look it up. Let's do another this or that then. While I have that Googling in the background. A trash can turkey or an enemy heart? This is for like a health pickup type thing.
Yeah. They're so distinct. I guess I'm more of a standard enemy heart. I feel like the trash can turkey is like a beat 'em up thing more.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not super into beat 'em up style games, so we'll go for it. We'll go for just a standard heart.
Yeah. I mean Castlevania mixes it both up. You can find turkeys hidden in the wall, and then you get hearts for your sub weapons, so you get both options there too. So
I was always confusing when I tried to play Castlevania, and I'm like, why aren't my hearts health?
Yeah, and why are they the equivalent to my sub weapon ammo and not actually my health? It is a heart. This makes no sense. Shenmue or Yakuza?
I haven't played either of them.
Okay.
I have had a lot of people tell me to play Yakuza, and people are like, we want you to draw Yakuza comics. I played on a friend's file for maybe half an hour. The only thing is Yakuza is 8+100-hour games.
Yeah.
And so it is very threatening to get into something like that. Shenmue obviously has a pretty interesting reputation, and yeah. I feel like I think I'm gonna pick Shenmue just because some of the early Shenmue memes stick with me, just like walking around and asking if you know any sailors.
Yeah,
things like that.
I think it's ripe for comics, like, so if you like, you know, even if you play it, like I think that's the one that would make so many cool like comics in your style out of that I would like to see. So
Yakuza
maybe one day
also
do that.
Has a very powerful fan base when people are like, get into Yakuza, Yakuza comics. I'm like, there's already so many people doing Yakuza fan art. You're fine. You don't need me.
I remember the launch of the original Yakuza, and I am a beat-em-up fan, so like that was like a game to me that was like mixing the Shenmue-style open-world-ish feel, but like with this beat-em-up gameplay, and I was like, oh, this will be great. But by the time I even knew it, like there was a sequel, and then I missed out playing the sequel, and I'd only played the first one, and then PS3 came, and there was like a zombie spinoff, and like it continued on, and then a prequel, and then like now it's even evolved beyond that, and you know, the Like a Dragon series with all new characters, or I guess in the same world and some returning characters, and then remakes of those original games in a newer engine, and then a whole genre change. Like, it's absolutely something I want to play and feel like I will love, but I'm just so intimidated to even know like where to start or where to even begin. And to know even like, even if I do enjoy it, like what am I setting myself up for? Like you said, like hundreds of hours potentially to like play through these things. And I just don't know. Like it's far too intimidating at this point for me, but I hope one day to try and just jump right in and just figure it out.
Yeah.
Let's see, Animal Crossing or Elden Ring.
I'll have to go Animal Crossing because I've never played Elden Ring.
I also have never played Elden Ring.
Yeah, I haven't dove into the From Software catalog yet. I'm interested, especially Elden Ring or Bloodborne. I'm not so sure about Dark Souls. I'm good at video games, I think. I'm decently good at video games. I like a challenge. I like a reasonable challenge. And I like a challenge that doesn't punish you super severely. Like if there's a hard boss battle, I want the retry to be basically instant. Like I'm okay mm-hmm. having to learn, learn boss patterns and things like that. But if it's a boss battle that I need to learn, let me restart from the beginning very easily. If I have to do this boss battle 10 plus times, don't make me sit through like a cutscene or something.
Oh man, yeah. There's a great I think Devolver was the publisher for it, but it's called Titan Souls. They made the same team, I believe, made Death's Door, you know, a few years back as well. Titan Souls was like, you know, a Souls-y, like Shadow of the Colossus-y type of vibe. Like one shot was all you needed to kill the boss character, and there was only boss characters out in the world. Mm. And when you got to certain areas, like you got a checkpoint essentially in like the center of like your, you know, biome hub area that you were in, but you died in one hit and the bosses died in one hit, but you just had to like figure out like dodging and maneuvering and like lining up to get that right timing to hit their weak point. And I remember putting together and cutting together just with like that share, whatever, like, you know, you can capture video on the PlayStation, everything. But I remember doing that and like making a montage of me dying like 30 times to the same boss and then finally killing it. But in the final like cycle of that all, like I kept in the walk from that checkpoint into the boss room. And it was like, you know, 20 seconds plus, you know, from like getting back there. But like all that time added up, especially getting into it, having just some dumb death that you like want to immediately like go back on, but you have to now walk back. It was like this brutal cycle that I enjoyed, but like I've not ever found that same joy out of trying to play like any of the Souls games myself. Like there's, I guess it's you need the right to be that right type of mindset to really, you know, get that balance. And I don't know if that's for me.
Yeah.
Unnecessary sequel or remake?
Oh, you know, I think nowadays, after there's been quite a few remakes I've enjoyed, I think I'm going to say remake. I have definitely been of the mindset where it's been a lot of like, why are you remaking this perfect game? Why are you making RE4? Why are you making Silent Hill 2? Why are you making MGS3? But so far, I've enjoyed all those remakes. And my one thing with remakes is I think the original should always be as accessible if you're going to remake something. And in the case of RE4 and MGS3, this is the case. It's not the case of Silent Hill 2. But RE4 especially, RE4 is one of my absolute favorite games of all time. He's like maybe top two. And when that got announced for a remake, I'm just like, why? Why? This game's perfect. It's on everything. It's on Switch. It's on Steam. But the thing about the RE4 remake is they changed enough that it was almost like getting to play RE4 for the first time again, which was really fun for me. and they changed some of the maps up. They added some different collectibles. They added some different enemies. They changed little bits of the story here and there. And the original is still my favorite, but I had a really fun time playing through that remake.
That's cool. Let's do the last one here. Do you want or pick between Amnesia or Hero Out of Time?
Wait, what are these? Oh, are these like plot ideas?
Yeah, like the RPG trope, you know, of like the main character either has amnesia or he just doesn't
Hero
belong in
time.
The world he's in. Okay.
Amnesia. I'm trying to think of like Hero Out of Time. I'm trying to think of games that have these tropes in them, and I'm struggling to think of either of them. I guess, let's see. What would Link's Awakening, is that amnesia? Maybe amnesia.
Yeah, that's a little bit. Because he's in this dream state and nobody knows him, and he doesn't really seem to speak for who he is or where he came from. He's just like, all right, I'll get involved with all your guys' tasks and needs. Here I am.
Yeah.
Hero Out of Time, Final Fantasy X, even Chrono Trigger-ish.
Yeah,
just because of you going to so many different areas.
Okay, I do love Final Fantasy X. And that one's just so goofy because it's like it's
okay. How about this? Would you rather have like if you were the main character of an RPG series, would you like to wake up in a world and not know who you are, or would you rather know who you are but be transported, to a different place you're unfamiliar with?
I think the latter. I think there's something more unsettling in never knowing where you came from. As opposed to knowing where you came from but being stuck somewhere else. Even though it's upsetting if you're in a place and you can never get back. But I think there's something dreadful about not knowing where you came from.
I think that's the first time I've asked that one.
That's very,
it's a weird one.
Very
I like
interesting.
That one. All right. Well, cool. That's the this or that. Let's jump into the icebreakers. Icebreaker. Let's see, which one shall we ask? Who is one of your favorite characters who wears the color blue?
Okay, blue. Raiden.
Raiden, okay.
MGS2, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, MGS2 is a good one.
Yeah, it's so I am known as an MGS fan, but I am a very recent MGS fan, only about 3 years now. But I still remember when MGS2 came out, even though I was like in middle school, I remember the Raiden controversy. I remember how angry everyone was. But
yeah. I was not angry. I mean, I was 12 maybe. Mm-hmm. No, I was like 13, I think. I was like early teenage, Yeah. And I was fine with it. The gameplay and the story was what I was there for, and that was like such an improvement over the PlayStation 1 Metal Gear Solid. And Snake was still there. You played for him at the first chapter, and he was still there in the background that you interacted with throughout it and everything. So to me, it was fine. It was the second game in the Solid series, so it's not like it there was some large history of what it had to be or anything. So I was like, all right, I'll go along with the ride. Like, this isn't my game. I'm just playing this game and I'm having fun. Okay. Who is this? All right. This is a cool character that I'm playing. That's got it.
That's good. That's the way to approach it.
I mean, it'd be one thing if it was like, the seventh Metal Gear Solid game and suddenly you weren't playing as Snake like you expected, but like that was, I mean, yes, there was the original Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2 and whatnot, but Solid was such like a fresh, like, break and the first like chance for a lot of players to play, so to really only have one game to set precedent before it, you're still free to do whatever you want from there.
Yeah,
I remember the demo for that came out in Zone of the Enders for PS2, and I had a friend who went and I didn't have the money at the time, but a friend went and bought Zone of the Enders 2 or Zone of the Enders, I'm sorry, the first one. And he went out and bought the game, and I remember convincing him, like, hey, like, obviously you bought Zone of the Enders, you really want to play this game, and you're probably going to obsess over it all weekend, that's totally fine. How about I just borrow this silly old demo here? Like, who cares? Like, it's just a demo, I could probably just take this home while you're playing Zone of the Enders, and maybe we can switch when you're done. And I really, really, really wanted to play it, and he was... he knew what I was doing, trying to manipulate my way into getting like that Metal Gear Solid 2 demo. But I think I still got my way, and I was, you know, over and over repeating playing that thing, you know, start to finish, you know, even though it was only like an hour of gameplay, like I played it so much that weekend. I could not wait for that game.
That's awesome.
Cool. Well, let's get into the main topic. This is a fun question that has not been asked that often and not been selected that often, but, tell us, who are some of your favorite gaming artists or designers? You know, some of the extra questions I threw in, like, you know, what are some of your favorite character designs and what makes them special and stand out to you? But
yeah,
it's kind of more of a personal story. So yeah, tell us your story of some of your favorites.
So I wrote down three for this. The first one is Shinichi Kamaoka, who I know him best for the art he did for Legend of Mana on the PlayStation 1. He's done some other stuff. He's worked on a few other Mana titles. He even worked on like Seiken Densetsu 2 and 3 as doing some character designs. But Legend of Mana is where I learned his art style. I had the guide for it. I had the manual for it. As a kid, I would just constantly look through at his artwork and draw the characters out of it. His character design is just absolutely gorgeous. His line work, his coloring style. And he has this ability to make side characters who may only have a few lines in the entire game just be some of the most absolutely stunning designs I've ever seen.
Yeah, I love that painterly style almost of that game.
It's absolutely like gorgeous. It's so unique, and there's this sketchiness. He does kind of a hatching to do some of the shading, and so it has a very unique, very illustrative quality to it.
Yeah, and that game also had this really cool like building aspect of it. Like you got to plot out where like the next key locations were going to be on this like flat map, and it wasn't like super unique. You didn't like transition to them directly, but you would just select them from the overworld map. But it was always neat to kind of feel like you're building your world. Like I remember being obsessed with that when like Dark Cloud came out years later on the PS2. But yeah, that Legend of Mana artwork is amazing. Like all of those like Squaresoft RPGs in the PS1, like I knew nothing of the people involved at that age. I just would look at the cover and see Squaresoft and think like, oh, this must be rad. And like that one just being bright and bold and colorful, like for sure stands out and is fantastic.
Yeah. Another one of the same era. I think that it was called like the Summer of Squaresoft or something. It was like 99 to 2000. And another one from that time for me is Threads of Fate, which also has a very bright, unique, beautiful design sense to it. It was a good era, and it was just this, you know, this time where the concept art couldn't match the graphics necessarily. So, you know, they kind of had to experiment with that in its own way.
Okay, that's cool. And you said you had three you wanted to
show? Yeah, so the second one, I wanted to bring up Ashley Wood, who he's the artist for Metal Gear Portable Ops and Peace Walker, as well as the comics. And I feel like he gets overlooked a little bit because obviously Yoji Shinkawa is extraordinary, is the main Metal Gear designer, the Death Stranding designer. Ashley Wood, his stuff it's a little more, I would say like, I don't know, it's a little more brash. It's a little more intense. He still has kind of a sketchy style that is similar in some qualities to Yoji Shinkawa, but there's an aspect of it that is quite powerful, and it's I don't know, it's like, I want to like say it's like pointier. There's just this quality it has that's quite extraordinary. He has this one art he did of Solidus, where Solidus is just this massive, massive figure, and there's like a tiny Raiden standing in front of him. And it's one of my favorite pieces of Metal Gear art.
Yeah, I absolutely love Ashley Wood stuff. So I had been into comic books as a kid. I don't remember ever like reading them as a kid, just collecting them, organizing them, and like flipping through them and everything. But once I got my first like job as an adult, you know, or, you know, I was 16. So wasn't an adult, but, you know, first job that was paying me money that I could afford things. I remember going to a comic shop and like starting a pull list and buying like comics pretty regularly. I specifically would always buy like video game related ones because I was thinking like, hey, like the more I buy here, the more I like will help support and show that it's worth getting other video game comics, you know, to be made and everything. And so when that Metal Gear Solid series first came out from IDW, like I was on board like day one. And I am like, Yoji Shinkawa is one of my favorite artists ever of all time. Like I would never want to replace him on Metal Gear or anything. But somehow like Ashley Wood has made it be like, you know what, like, You're good. You're not a substitute. You're not a stand-in. I absolutely think that you can stand in this realm, and I can respect you, appreciate it, and love it. You know, and it belongs. Like, sure, I always want Shinkawa, but Ashley Wood, like, I was never disappointed in any of the art that he did for that series. Like, it's so good.
It was so smart to have him do it for the PSP titles because, you know, they had to do comic style cutscenes because the PSP wasn't powerful enough to do these full rendered cutscenes like they usually have. And so it just worked perfect with the medium. It's like, oh, let's, you know, we're going to have to do comic style cutscenes. Who can we get to do them? And Ashley Wood, I think his experience as a comic artist has really lent to that, whereas Yoji Shinkawa has more experience as an illustrator and as a concept artist.
Yeah. Yeah. Ashley Wood stuff. Obviously, the comics are great, and those digital graphic novels on the PSP as well, like how it like deconstructed the art and put it into layers and let you like zoom in and zoom out of it and everything was such a cool interactive way to like see that art up close as well, too. Like, I always loved that. Yeah, Ashley Wood does a bunch of, you know, cool stuff as well. There's some really cool art books he's got. He draws robots and humans in a very unique and kind of cool way, and interesting person. But yeah, that Metal Gear work by him is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He's Australian, I think, too. Yes. Which is interesting. I don't know why that's interesting, like that one fact. Hey, he was born in this other continent, but like,
he's
hey, not, yeah, that's
from
interesting
here.
Yeah. Cool. I love these choices so far, in the secret choice of Yoji Shinkawa being represented there.
Yeah.
Too,
like, I mean, I feel like that would have been an obvious as a Metal Gear fan, so
yeah. But still, you know, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Stuff. Yeah, so then who is this third? I'm excited to hear this third.
C, who is the main concept artist for Double Fine Games. So he did the concept art.
Say the name again. Sorry,
Scott,
I think I may
C.
have just cut out.
His name is Scott. Oh, okay. Campbell, but he always goes by Scott C. He did all the concept art for Psychonauts. He did the concept art for Brutal Legend. His style is, he uses a lot of watercolors, and his line work is, it's like this kind of, it's a little like wobbly, sketchy kind of line work mixed with watercolors. It's like really, if you've played Psychonauts, obviously the character designs are very unique. They're all kinds of shapes and sizes and proportions. And it's one of the things I love so much, especially the year. Psychonauts has been one of my favorite games since it came out. I backed Psychonauts 2 immediately, and then it took, you know, like 6 years or whatever to finally come out. And it was so refreshing playing Psychonauts 2 because I do feel a lot of modern games are just now the kind of hyper-realism. And to play something that has such a unique art direction, such unique character designs as Psychonauts 2 was just really nice, and bright colors and things like that in a world of very realistic colors and realistic faces and things like that.
Yeah, I'm looking up some of his art as well. I mean, Psychonauts, like I know those images and everything. Mm-hmm. And their characters, like, so they are very unique and cool. I don't want to like reduce it down to like remind me of like Hey Arnold and like, you know, the odd head shape proportions and things like that. But it does give me some of those vibes. But even some of his original art and this other art I'm looking at looks really cool. There's this
he does a lot really of silly... like kids books. He does these, he has this series of watercolor art he does called Great Showdowns, which is based, it's usually movies, and he has kind of the two opposing characters or sides from these movies, and he draws them. I feel a similarity between him and Sir Quentin Blake, who is the illustrator for like the Roald Dahl novels.
Mm.
The kind of the simplicity, but the simplicity lends itself to a lot of character, a lot of freedom to have these characters express things. And it's, there's a lot of concept art, especially nowadays, is very painterly. It's, you know, it's very detailed. It's very beautiful. And to have Double Fine use a concept artist who does not draw concept art that looks like it's for video games. It looks like it's for a cartoon or for comics or something different. It's just so unique and so interesting. And I think it continues to have let Double Fine stand out because they use artists like Scott C. to do their concept art.
Yeah, I want to buy this book or these Great Showdown books now. These are cool.
Yeah, I just...
I see what you're saying too. The Roald Dahl, the artist who works on, in like the faces, I think like the minimal line work on the faces that are still really showing like a lot of expression.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's, I can definitely see that like in Charlie and the Chalk Defector or, you know, the artwork I've seen for those books as well too.
And so they're
super cool.
They're both just like huge inspirations for me. I think, the idea of getting a lot from simplicity, that, you know, doing just this, the ability to kind of have a simple base and be able to do so much with it is just really special. And, every time I look at his artwork, it just fills me with like unbridled joy. He's done multiple, but I have two of his big he did Twin Peaks, beautiful full illustrations. And then recently after David Lynch passed away, he did a tribute piece, which is David Lynch surrounded by characters from all his films and shows. And it's just such a precious tribute. And I just had to buy it instantly.
Yeah, I'm a huge Twin Peaks fan. Actually, in front of me, above my desk, I have some Twin Peaks art done by some comic artists, Matt Kent and Brian Hurt. And then like Jeff Lemire has done some Twin Peaks stuff. That's just really rad that, there's a magazine, like a David Lynch, like fanzine, everything about Twin Peaks and everything. And for the final issue, there was a really cool piece just as well, just done by Jeff Lemire, which I love as well. So I'm going to have to hunt that down too, because I'm a big obsessive Twin Peaks fan. So.
Yeah, I as well. Cool. I've done it before, but just recently again, I did the pilgrimage out to, South Bend, where the diner is and where the waterfall on the outside of the Great Northern. So
yeah, yeah. I've never done that, and I should, like, I guess, I mean, Portland, you know, I will be there later in the year.
I mean, take
an extra day, and
it's less than an hour outside of Seattle. So if you're ever up there for any reason, if you ever end up at PAX or whatever, it's a really easy trip to make, and it's so worth it.
Yes, I'm going to do that one day. but go ahead.
I was just going to say also, obviously, I'm a Twin Peaks fan and also a fan of all the games that Twin Peaks has influenced. You know, Link's Awakening, Silent Hill, Alan Wake. Grasshopper has also taken a lot of stuff from Twin Peaks, and our Suda has in the office like a 12-inch like statue of Agent Cooper. So it was a huge influence, especially on Japanese game developers.
Yeah, there's that I don't know why I'm blanking on the name. There's a PS1 game that was really heavily inspired that recently got like an English translation of it. I don't know why I'm blanking on the name now. But Yeah, I love to dig into like any of those games that have like clear, like fun threads to it and are inspired by it.
Yeah.
Please continue to make them, developers, anybody who's listening who has the ability to do so. Fun stuff. I've put a nice little wish list of things I want to buy now after talking to you, which is maybe not a good thing. But thank you for sharing those. We did it. This episode ran a little longer, but I think that's okay. Hopefully people found some new artists to go check out and follow and maybe buy some stuff from, but also buy some stuff from Maddie. Links in the show notes below, as well as the social media handles and everything. But thanks so much for doing the show again.
Thank you.
After our last episode.
And yeah. I totally forgot. I'm bad at promoting myself, but I should promote my Patreon. So I do have a monthly Patreon. I do a postcard and sticker sheet design of a video game every month. It's been running for about a year now. I've done like Metal Gear 2 and 3. I've done Resident Evil 4. I've done Final Fantasy 10. Recently doing one for Donkey Kong. But Bonanza. Oh, for some reason, I really struggle to say that title. I always say Banzanza.
Bananaza.
I've done like Ape Escape and Silent Hill 2. So that's if you're interested in getting some little fun things in your mailbox every month, I think it's a pretty fun Patreon to subscribe to.
Cool. How much is that that tier? How much is that support?
So it's it's $6 for a postcard, $8 for a sticker sheet, or $12 for both.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I do a Patreon that I also never promote and I need to do better at. But I do a postcard of the month, which is just a single screenshot on one side and like a retro review of the game on the other.
Oh, cute.
I've done a Metal Gear Solid 3 one over the last year, and I did an Indigo Prophecy one, which you know, I felt had some Lynchian ties with Angelo Baldamonte for the music and everything.
Indigo Prophecy is such an interesting one because it was one of my favorite games on the original Xbox. I played it, you know, when I was 13, maybe. And I know, what's the creator's name?
David Cage.
Yeah, I know he has not the greatest reputation, but I have very precious memories of Indigo Prophecy. I haven't played it since, so I haven't played it in like 20 years. I don't know if I would still enjoy it as much, but I do remember it just being really interesting and unique, and I still think that aspect of it would probably hold up today.
Yeah, and I loved it. Same thing, same reasons. Like, you know, the choose your own adventure aspect of it was just so cool. Like being a fan of like books like that as a kid growing up, and but you know, like a dark story, and I thought it was rad. And I just disappointed to hear like all like the crunch and like other people treatment stuff that David Cage seems to have negative stigma around. I also don't know what else they've been really working on recently. I think they may actually be working on a Star Wars game now at the moment, but still support Maddie's Patreon. Then I'll put that link in the show notes as well then there too. So folks, check it out, check out all the stuff, do all the things, click all the links, follow along and support. But Maddie, again, appreciate you coming on the show. You have my list of questions. If you ever want to come on and do some more episodes, you let me know. You're always welcome. But it was a fun conversation.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, have a good one, everybody, and we'll catch you again next week.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai Captain Dangerous Parker and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.